We're in the midst of a biodiversity crisis in Ireland. Across the country, we've seen catastrophic declines of birds, wild bees, and native plants. Even once common species of our farmland and open countryside, like the kestrel and lapwing, are now in trouble. The intensification of farming and forestry since the 70s led to biodiversity losses. As directed by policy and payments, more and more land was brought into production, and less space was left for wildlife. Yet if we're to reverse or even halt these losses, it is across Irish farmland that change will happen. If it's to happen at all, farmers are the ones who can turn this crisis around, and some have made a start. My name is Mary Brophy, and across a spring and autumn, I spent time with some Donegal farmers who are farming with nature, as they create or conserve habitats on their farms, and doing what they can to protect wildlife and their living. This is Nature Farmers. Summer is moving on in Donegal.
They won't go down the other gate, will they?
No, they'll go right now. How do you ever leave this top corner? That's Sile Rams. And the daddies and the granddaddies.
When I was last with Boyd Bryce here on Inch Island, he was telling me about his plans to sow 4 or 5 acres of wildflower cover on his farm. Grasses and flowering species, sown solely to provide habitat and food for pollinators and wild birds. So I've come to see how he got on.
Well, the last time I was up here, it was spring, and we're now at the end of July, beginning of August. So what state, this was ploughed at that stage, or you were just about to reseed it?
Yeah, we seeded it, and just at the end of April we sowed it. We now have managed to sow a wildlife friendly crop on it. This is not for harvesting, this is for to remain until next March before it can be interfered with again. So
and how much have you planted here?
Well, on this particular plot, I think there's 3 acres. I have 10 acres of this planted. I have 3 different plots. It's all under a National Parks Farm Plan scheme. Well, here we have one of our bees. That's one of the reasons for the bees have no flowering plants nowadays to feed on. We have a bee that's feeding on this this particular plant is fodder radish. It produces a seed pod. A lot of flowers on it this time of year, and then in the winter time it has this seed pod, a bit like peas you'd have in the garden, only the seeds inside are much smaller. And this is what the finches specialise on. The seeds aren't really formed there yet.
Just starting to.
That'll ripen and turn dark brown or black, and the linnets in particular are very fond of that.
And that's radish.
That's radish. There are also we put some oats on it ourselves just to boost it up a wee bit, and there's some triticale. That's this grain here. It's a hybrid, it's called triticale, and it's a sort of a cross between a wheat and a barley. It's not barley and it's not wheat. It has a long shelf life. It'll still be available for wildlife at Christmas, whereas oats or wheat or that would be rotten at that stage.
So you'd expect birds to feed on this coming into winter?
That is the theory. What we're expecting here now is bees and butterflies, creepy crawlies of all descriptions. And then later in the year, October, November, December, we'll be expecting goldfinch, chaffinch, linnets are lovely. The linnets love this kind of stuff. We have a lot of flax here sown.
This is flax here,
that's
yellow.
Flax, and
that will go to seed as well, obviously.
That's your flax head there, and that the linnet seed, the seed was inside that wee pod.
That's the linseed.
That's the linseed, yeah. And
people would be familiar with flaxseed that they would maybe put on their cereal in the mornings.
Yeah, it's the same thing as far as I know. I don't use it myself. This here, this lovely blue plant here, that's cornflower.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's. I think it's a wild plant originally, but I have never seen it in the wild as such.
I as we walk through this though, Boyd, it's just the most, like, it really is idyllic. Now the sun has come out, but as we're walking through, we're rising all these butterflies. There's like, it's working.
Lots of butterflies.
Yeah.
This is a daisy of some description. I don't know the proper name for it, but it's a wild daisy. This is sown now. That's a mouse pea.
Yeah.
Vetch, that's a vetch. Yeah. Robert's name's a vetch. Now, if you'd have told your grandfather that you were sowing mouse peas, he would have really thought you were crazy. Because mouse peas at the time were considered like
one of the weed of
cultivated land, like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But it is like the vetch is from the pea family. So you can even see it there, the way it's growing. It has that little tendrils.
I just managed to
catch on.
Grip onto everything, so it's now coming out the top of the crop.
But the benefit for the wildlife is these beautiful blue flowers with that long cone-like shape, and I'm sure the bees love this. Perfect for the pollinators, to get at.
This is a new one on me here now. I never encountered this fella before. This is a member, obviously, of the clover family, and I thought it said on the pack red clover. But I was quite familiar with red clover, and this is certainly not red clover. So the last day there was an official here, I brought up the subject, what the devil is this? Of course she went to her mobile phone and clicked it in, and this is crimson clover.
Wow.
So it's someone I never heard tell of before.
Well, it looks like a clover plant on steroids, because it's so tall and the leaves are quite large down at the base. Yeah. But as we get to the top, it's almost like a red lavender flower.
Yes.
Just a really tall
flower.
Now that
flower is past the sell-by date.
Yeah, we can see that. But the most beautiful claret kind of colour at the top.
So that's a new one on me. I never saw that before.
You can see why it's so good for wildlife, because there's so many individual flowers on the one stem.
That was in the mix.
And for a 3-acre field, how much did the seed cost? How much did you...
I would be embarrassed to say that's very expensive.
Really?
Really expensive, yeah.
Can I get it off the record later?
Possibly, yeah. But the way I looked at the situation was I was getting paid for planting it and sowing it.
Yes.
So the money I was getting on my payment was happily covering the cost,
okay.
And I was only just turning it around and taking it back out again. The farm plan is quite quite generous.
The MPWS Farm Plan Scheme funds farmers to create habitats, install ponds, safeguard particular species like corncrake, or trial novel approaches to farming for nature. And drawn up by the farmer, the plan is tailored to suit the conditions and wildlife of each farm.
The bottom line is, I was speaking somewhere recently and I said, you could not pay me to play golf. And you probably could not pay somebody that's playing golf to come and do what I'm doing. So it does, whatever you're interested in, deep down, I'm interested in this kind of thing. I enjoy standing here showing you the various plants. There's a nice poppy growing there. So I enjoy it deep down, and I enjoy it. I'm getting compensated for it at the moment with this farm plan. So if you were a golf player and somebody decided to sponsor you to play golf, you'd think you were in heaven. So I'm getting somebody to sponsor me to do this, so I'm happy. And I enjoy seeing the results.
Wait, for this is the first year that this has gone in here.
Yes.
And as we're standing here now, just talking, I'm seeing right behind your head, there are bees landing. There are I can't get over the amount of butterflies.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been talking to other people recently about the lack of butterflies this year and not seeing them. But this is proof positive that build it and they'll come.
If you produce the habitat, it doesn't matter what it is. If you dig a pond, the ducks will turn up. If you plant Sitka spruce forest, the red squirrels will turn up. So things out there are continuously looking for some place happy to live.
Mm.
Unfortunately, very little of our wildlife has any place to live. We've managed to sterilize the countryside. Unfortunately, on this small scale, it's not going to revolutionize the world. This would have to be done on a much larger scale, and there would need to be an awful lot more people involved in it.
It's illegal to set fire to the hills in Ireland between the 1st of March and the 31st of August. And while some fires are accidental, others are set illegally, all with devastating impacts for wildlife and biodiversity, such as nesting birds or breeding mammals. But could there be an answer that's good for farmers and nature?
Things is a lot greener, and you know, you can see that agroforestry, the bushes are all flourished, you know, so everything, I suppose, looks a bit better. I think it just looks a bit better.
It's July and the landscape has put on her summer colours on James Breslin's farm outside Redcastle.
It was just being planted when we were here last.
Well, it was planted, but you know, there were no leaves, there were just buds coming, you know, so. Now even the pond in there, now it's, you know, there's a lot more growth on it now than there was the last time you were here.
So we're heading
up now to the galloways here. This is the bare sward, but as you can see, it's only been grazed. The sheep's only out of it there, you know, 2 days ago.
A few weeks after my last visit, James moved his Galloway cattle to his hill land, and I'm curious to see this herd in their natural terrain.
So when would you normally move the Galloways up?
Usually up at the beginning of May, around that time, to go to the mountain and they stay out there to as long as you can, depending on the weather. You know, October, usually you get to October, maybe longer if you're lucky. You do check them from time to time. You soon know when they're content, you know, because if they're not content, they will come to the boundary of the green land, you know, they'll come to the fence. So you'll soon hear them roaring, you know. There are sheep out there with them, I'd be out regular checking them and the sheep, you know, so. Come on. Come on, Ava. Come on. They're 36 here at the minute, but come on. They have to be cut down because the cost of want the feeding has got too high, you know. See, I'm going organic, so I'd have to buy organic silage because that's nearly double the price. Somebody said they've sold silage the other day out of the feeding in Cardona, €40 a bale, so there's no way that I could give 60 or €70 a bale for silage. Come on.
And then they appear over the brow of the hill. Galloway are an old Scottish breed of cattle that have a dual coat, a soft inner coat that insulates and an outer coat that repels the rain. It makes the Galloway a very hardy animal, able to withstand wet and cold weather, and ideal for this Donegal hill land.
On a snowy day, they're lovely to look at. If the snow would lie on them for forever, they're that well insulated.
Yes.
You know, they're like a house that's well insulated. You can see the snow lying on the roof. You can see it lying on their back.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. They would come closer so that you can feed them, you know, because when you have to come with hay or silage or whatever, it's...
In winter?
Yeah, it has to be fairly convenient.
But you're not housing them over winter, are you?
No, some of the ones would be bigger, you know, maybe for finishing or something like that would be housed, but no, I try and keep them out. That's the whole idea of it. If the weather gets too wet, if you start to poach land, well, you have to put them on, you know, because you can't poach your land. In the beginning of May, you open the gate, they're just ready to go. You know, they just run out past you, you know, right to the mountain. They're just delighted to get out, you know. But in general, they would be off way up there. You wouldn't see, they'd just run up there, you know, as happy as could be. Everything will go to the high ground. Sheep, everything goes to high ground in the evening whenever they're midges, you know, because high ground, the more air.
Yeah.
Whatever chance you have of getting rid of the midges on top of the hill, you have no chance of getting rid of them on the bottom of the hill. So, I think about 8 years ago, we bought the first of them. You know, myself and Henry Don went to Scotland, we bought a couple each. You know, and that started us off. So, we started off the first two and their calves, you know, was just put out on a square out there, and like the next year I could see a benefit of having them there, so then I added to them and went to a bigger area.
Were you watching to see what the vegetation was doing?
Exactly, yeah. I was watching to see were they doing what I thought they were supposed to do, and they were.
You see, James has reintroduced the Galloway to his hill ground for a very specific purpose. He's using the cattle to manage and reduce the fire load of the vegetation that has become an increasing risk in this landscape.
We were destocked here back in was it 99 or whatever, like all mountains. And some of that mountain was high in that gorse, you know, it was, there were a lot of millennia grass got too high, the sheep won't eat it. The heather got high, you know, and it got, as I say, woody. So I had to bring it back under control. They're very strict on the burning, and then was forestry around us. You know, it was very dangerous to burn.
Millennia Carolea, or purple moorgrass, is a native deciduous perennial grass, and it's the accumulation of dry, dead material that makes it such a fire hazard. While burning is used by farmers to manage gorse on the uplands, research from Belgium found that burned land appeared to increase the spread of invasive millennia, compounding the problem. But Galloway have no problem with millennia.
You know, they're non-selective, they say. They eat, you know, that grass, they eat rushes even times later on. So, and they're between eating and tramping through the high heather, you know, the new heather comes, you know, so to me they're doing a good job.
For now, James is happy to continue this so-called conservation grazing, reducing fire risk and the dominance of certain species. As long as these uplands aren't overstocked and overgrazed again, perhaps this is a sustainable solution that can work for nature and farmers.
You know, to look at them, they're healthy, they're shiny. You know, as I said before, like, they've never seen dose, they've never seen nothing, you know, never seen concentrates or anything like that, so. Come on. Come on. Come on.
I came to Donegal in 1994. I had a bird book then, a Collins Guide to Irish Birds. And I think in that bird book, which was probably written in the 80s, it says that there's 16,000 pairs of lapwing. Well, you could divide that by 1,000 now. You know, their numbers have declined by 95% since the 1980s.
That's Emer McGee, a conservation ranger with the MPWS. And if the corncrake has become the poster bird for the alarming decline in our farmland bird species, the lapwing should share that terrible stage. It's hard to believe that lapwing, or the pillabeen, was once declared Ireland's national bird, as few now would recognise its distinctive look or call.
The two major factors that have caused this decline in their population is the drainage of wetlands. So that would be in the wider countryside, it would be intensification, farmland, farm improvement of their habitats, kind of marginal wet habitats that's been improved. And then the second one would be, as their population declined, because they do breed on the ground, very open areas, they're very vocal and they're very vulnerable to and there a lot of various predators.
Emer and I have made our way to the Fen here on the Sheskenmoor Nature Reserve, where in 2013 Birdwatch Ireland began a project to attempt to protect the lapwing.
What you're looking at is that it's fenced off with dense mesh wire fencing that's topped with two strands of electrified fencing. So this is referred to as the predator fence, but its success has fluctuated over the period of time since then. We do get a flock of wintering lapwing. So lapwing are here all year round. In winter, those flocks are supplemented by wintering birds from the continent. But we do have a flock in this area, and then they stay and they do attempt to breed here. So in 2022, 10 pairs attempted to breed. When I came out with the wader manager from Birdwatch, we saw nests with 4 eggs in them, but we also were finding single eggshells outside the predator fence, which indicated aerial predation. Mm. There's always flocks of corvids around, and they are a constant threat. And that's what you would see them waste a lot of their energy doing here, is fending off aerial pursuers. Now, if you had a big, healthy population, it would be just all part of the natural cycle. But when you have such a low numbers of breeding lapwing, they're the initial aerial threat, but then...
It's just exacerbated.
Unfortunately, the fence isn't a deterrent to mammalian, mammal predators who can dig under it. And there was two nest cameras set up, and at both of those nests, they captured images of badgers predating the nests. Yeah.
No chicks survived in 2022. The same happened in 2020. At least two broods of chicks had been observed in mid-May that year. But at the end of May, badgers dug under the fence. And by the morning, all chicks and remaining nests were gone.
This was worth attempting. It needs to go back to the drawing board, higher spec fence, and more resources to try and babysit them through their breeding season, because they are trying, and there were 10 nests. So, you know, it's kind of what more can be done.
And that's the heartbreak.
It's not enough.
That's the heartbreak for you.
That's where you go, actually, when the more closely you examine something, the more you see you're helping, but you need to help more. There has been successes in places, and these fences have really had a massive difference in a short time in other locations, and in other locations in Donegal. So it just means for each site that you try and do something, an intervention to help them, you really need to familiarise yourself with what are the threats on that site, because what worked elsewhere mightn't apply.
It's so complex.
Well, it's just, you can see straight away it requires targeted staff to manage that alone, and resources.
Without these resources, the lapwing seems fated to a vicious descending spiral. But even if their numbers can increase in nature reserves, if habitats and conditions in the wider landscape remain the same, we risk these places becoming zoos, not incubators. Sheskin Moor is a protected area, and so designated adjacent farmers are compensated for farming less intensively or to certain criteria. For now, Emer sees potential in these to become expanding pockets of hope.
What species need is a cluster of sanctuaries that are close to one another. We have 8 National Parks and Wildlife Farm Plans here on our property and on our neighbouring farmers' properties. So we have like this kind of 1,000 acres. We don't want this to be a gated community here where it's this sanctuary and what happens outside is of no concern. It most certainly is. And so going into 2023, we have also attracted an additional 9 farmers in the vicinity of here. And what we want is to connect that we have farms that are in bespoke farm plans that are catering for farming for nature, and they're connected by corridors, whether those corridors are rivers or tree lines or roadside verges, but that we are trying to connect them all to one another as well. So 2 other farmers here have created artificial scrapes on their parcels of land in order to create some more habitat that's suitable for breeding lapwing. So those scrapes, they're literally just, you get a digger in and you scrape a long, shallow, muddy area out, and that's what the lapwings, when they've bred, that's where they like to bring their chicks for them to teach them to feed. Mm. Ideal food for
so
chicks.
A couple of hours work at a digger.
Exactly.
Could make a huge amount of difference.
There, as we were talking about creating a cluster, so they're on 2 other farm plans close to this cluster.
Next time on Nature Farmers.
Their primary objective on the farm here is building topsoil. Egg production is just a very positive unintended consequence. These are what driving the changes in the farm.
Nature Farmers was directed and presented by Mary Brophy. It is produced by Neil Boyle. It is an IWR media production for Highland Radio, funded by Commission Le Mans with a television licence fee.